I'm Bay, and you're listening to Bay Baltimore, a weekly pop culture and society podcast recorded in a quiet neighborhood in Baltimore. This week, I want to talk about Wendy Williams and her current separation, soon to be divorce, from her husband, Kevin. All right, so real quick, I am recording on release day, and this was not intentional, but I woke up and it just, you know, I just began to think about Wendy. And actually, I'd been thinking about her for a while since, you know, I, like everyone else, get most of my news from Twitter. And I, you know, my news feed has been just blowing up over the last couple of days, maybe a week, about what's been going on with Wendy. Certainly over the last month and a half, let's be clear, when, you know, she started to make these absences from her show, and then she checked herself into rehab, a sober house, and then she came back, and then, she left again. And so, which I think that second leave, that second departure was planned, like that was vacation. Anyhow, but I've just been drawn to Wendy. And yeah, so I had originally intended on doing something completely different, bringing you something completely different. I actually recorded an entire show, an infamous Baltimore episode, which I will give you next week. So look out for that. And you know, it's a interesting one for me, but it's like a true crime one, like a more gritty than the Rosedale or the Rosewood girls. So just look for the disclaimer for that one. But yeah, so I'll bring you that next week, and then I'll put a little note ahead of the show just to let you know that some of the information that I'm talking about regarding the current events are a little out of date, because it was intended for this week. But nevertheless, so real quick, before I get into just Wendy and what her show when she was on WBLS meant to me, and just, I'll just give you a whole bunch of information about the backstory and then what I know, from having, you know, listened to Charlamagne's bio and all of that regarding, you know, his relationship with Wendy, his allegiance to Wendy, and then also that tenuous, strenuous relationship she had with Kevin, as well as just some of his underhanded business dealings and just who he kind of was. Anyhow, but I'll talk about that. But real quick, just to give you an update on what's going on with the mayor. Nothing's really changed. She's still on leave. And folks are still asking for her, you know, signing petitions for her to resign. Certainly the city council has asked for her to resign. State officials, state legislators have not, as yet, en masse. They haven't, like, released, like, a joint statement, but, like, certainly some have made statements. One way or the other. And then the Sun came out with an article today, release day, where it said that while Mayor Pugh is on leave, Baltimore City taxpayers, me being one of them, me and my hubby being one of them, are paying her and five other staff members, five or six other staff members, over $600,000 in salary during this leave. So it is costing us while she's not acting as mayor. Now, again, she went on leave, Mayor Pugh, talking about Mayor Pugh, amidst this Healthy Holly book scandal, not because of the scandal itself, as she claimed, her office claimed, but or her staff claimed, but because of pneumonia. Now, what we know is, or complications with pneumonia. Now, you know, leading up to this, like the week prior, she took sick and dodged a, or was, excuse me, she was unavailable for a press conference or one of her regular briefings to the city because, or to, you know, residents, because she had pneumonia. And I'm sure there's medical records to back this up. I don't think she was lying that she had pneumonia, because pneumonia is serious. or pneumonia is something you can get for a number of different reasons. And the older you get, the more susceptible to contracting pneumonia you are. But the thing to me that is suspicious is that, so she took, you know, she took sick and she was unavailable for a couple of days, but then she popped back up and she did a press release, that weird press conference about the baby clothes and the book and trying to explain herself, right? And then, you know, more things came out about more connections, about more organizations that gave her money, that subsequently, you know, their companies got hot contracts with the city. Again, Kaiser Permanente was rolled up into that. There was one other organization that, after, you know, some founder or someone high up and connected to the organization gave her a lot of money, that their organization got a favorable contract with the city. And again, Kaiser Permanente is the only one that I'm thinking of right now, although there are more, because Kaiser Permanente currently holds the insurance contract for city workers, for the city. And it was a straight line drawn between, you know, the organization giving money, and then, you know, a couple of months later, you know, I guess I'm not sure about the timing, but maybe it was the end of the fiscal, beginning of the new fiscal year, they won the contract to offer insurance to, or health services, their services to, the city, and they won. Yeah. Anyhow. But nothing has changed. So there's more dirt that keeps coming out, of course. And again, there's still those rumors that this whole thing started because of the people who own Pimlico or the Preakness, what have you, not Pimlico proper, but Preakness, and how, you know, they started to dig dirt up on Mayor Pugh because they don't want more opposition to them moving to Laurel, to the racetrack in Laurel. Anyhow, so there's that. So nothing has changed. It's just we kicking out over $600,000 to her and her 5 staff members while she on leave. And Jack Young is the acting mayor, which sucks. It just sucks. It does suck. It really sucks if this is actually legit and she really is on leave because this pneumonia is kicking her tail. It's just hard for me to believe. Like, I don't want to be that person, but like, pneumonia kicks your tail to the point where you can't just come back and do a press conference after having taken a day or two off. You need to, like, if it's the infection is really bad, it sounds like you are having issues breathing. And I don't know how she sounded in those press conferences. I wasn't really listening. And maybe I should go back and see if I can find a tape about that. Or like a little clip of the press release where she, that awkward press release with the baby clothes, to see if she was like, it sounded like she was labored in her breathing. But like, if you've ever been around someone who has pneumonia, it sounds like they have pneumonia. It sounds like a baby asthma attack. You know what I mean? Like it's about to be, they're about to have an asthma attack because it's labored. Their breathing is labored. Anyway, so I don't know, but like, it's a serious infection that could kill you. And so if she's really battling with that, I hope she's well, but if she's using that as another dodge, shame on her and please get her up out of here. We paying too much money for her not to be doing her job, and she should have resigned anyway. Like, that's just a cold hard fact. It is what it is. Whether or not you felt like you were doing anything untoward on purpose, here we are, baby. Here we are. And this city is in such a weakened state right now because of just all, we're just beat up right now. And this is the last thing that we need. Can you please step to the rear? Please. Anyhow, speaking of Pimlico, recently there was a Sun article. I follow the Sun. It's my local newspaper. What are you going to do? The Baltimore Sun. Anyhow, and I follow a lot of reporters from the Sun, as I've said on several different episodes. So this is nothing new. But it was reported that some monitoring agency came and inspected Pimlico Stadium ahead of the Preakness, this May, and deemed 6,000 or 60,000 seats, to be in poor condition and not able to support the weight of a person sitting in it, and therefore need to be cordoned off thereby making, just automatically taking out those seats, making the Preakness and the changing the amount of people that the stadium could hold, because they took like either 6,000 or 60,000 seats they deemed not worthy. Which is real cute, because why would you monitor, like, why would you come in and look at it now? Like, why would you do this now? The timing seems funny. Like, why would you come? It's finna be May. Like, it's 2 weeks to May. Why would you tell them now? Oh, my bad. These seats, they have to be fixed. If you go forward right now, you're not going to be able to. You're going to be short. You're going to be short this X amount of seats. Sounds like a sabotage. It sounds like somebody's just playing a game. And I don't put anything past Baltimore politics. This is a game here. And again, all roads lead to move the Preakness to Laurel, because somebody dropped a whole lot of money and they're not even being subtle about it. And so by hook or by crook, we're moving that thing to Laurel. So I don't have any, just like I feel like, never mind, I was going to say something real controversial. I am a pessimist in many cases. I love to be an optimist, but I'm a realist, which borderlines pessimism. And I just don't see why at this point we would keep Pimlico, or we would keep the Preakness race in Pimlico, given all these odds that seem to be stacked against us. People don't want to just upgrade the stadium, because that's too much like right. They didn't spend money down in Laurel. They going to move it to Laurel by hook or by crook. So we'll see. We'll see how that goes down. Anyway, before I get too far gone, let me just, circle back around to what today's episode is going to be about. And you could tell I'm already fired up. So just roll with it. Okay. This isn't going to be one of those soothing listens, or maybe it will be. I don't know. I don't know what I'm about to say, other than I have some strong feelings about Wendy Williams. Number one, about her chosen profession, but then also just the story. This whole story about her relationship with Kevin, her allegiance to Kevin for so many years, and how that has manifested. I'm going to talk about, I guess I'll start by talking about my connection to Wendy Williams and her radio show. Then I'll talk about what I know about her relationship with Charlamagne as it relates to her relationship with Kev and the fallout of that, what I know about the fallout of that, thanks to, reading gossip columns back in the day when it happened, but then also reading Charlamagne's biography, which I did that. It's done now. But and then also hearing a piece of his story after he heard that Wendy had left Kevin. So yeah, all right. Okay, so I just realized that I really need to spell things out more as I'm laying this foundation, okay? Because I don't want to assume that everyone knows what I'm talking about, because again, I have folks who are, there are folks who are listening to the show from across the country and not even in the country. So Wendy Williams is who I'm referring to. Wendy Williams has a talk show, a daytime talk show, which essentially is a visual extension of, or a visual version of, what she used to do on the radio when she was a New York DJ for WBLS. She had a drive time radio show from, 5 to 7. For many years in New York City. She's a New York City based DJ. She started out, her career began as a DJ, and she was with one radio station, and then she moved, I think she was with Kiss FM, something like that, and then in New York City DJ station. And then she moved to WBLS, which is a historically black R&B hip hop station. And that's where her show was housed for many years. And so she was, had been known since the beginning as like a gossip personalities, like someone who would tell all your business. And that had gotten her in trouble, just like it can get, it has gotten her into trouble recently on her show, because again, on her TV show, because again, her TV show is nothing but an extension, a visual version of what she did on the radio. It's just reaching more people. And you know, she can do more things. She's got a bigger budget. But the Wendy Show has always been the Wendy Show. And so, and she's always talked about people, and yeah, it's been controversial. It's been, but it's been entertaining the entire time, because her show, whether or not you like Wendy Williams and her brand of journalism, it is entertaining. People tune in to hate watch, hate listen when she was on the radio, but to get the juice. To get the juice that, you know, you might not want to be the gossip, but you enjoy listening to a gossip secretly. And so her brand of journalism tapped into that, that piece of us, piece of a lot of people. Now, a lot of folks don't enjoy her, don't enjoy what she does. And so they don't listen to her because they feel it's mean spirited. And in many cases, it does come across as very mean spirited, even though she can defend it as much as she wants. It reads mean spirited. And some of the questions, certainly she, when she was on the radio, some of her questions were very raw and pointed, and designed to get a rise out of folks. And she was famous for her back and forth, just real cutthroat relationship with Whitney Houston, who, you know, Wendy, again, a shock, they call her a shock jock at the time. So, you know, to do anything shocking, say anything shocking. So she would just come out and say, you know, Wendy's a crackhead or whatever, or excuse me, allegedly. I don't know if she ever actually said that, but she would say some hardcore things that people were thinking, or there were rumors about, Whitney. And she would say those things while having Whitney on as a guest, either on phone or in the studio. Again, talking back to her radio station, to her, to the radio show. And so Whitney famously would gather her to get, just gather her right on up. Now, again, not again, but what we know is Whitney was from Newark, which is a hop, skip, and a jump outside of New York City. And Wendy was from New York City too, although she famously lives in Jersey now. But that's kind of what it is. You know what I mean? There are folks who live in Jersey, but like still connected to New York. It's kind of, I'm sure that local folks wouldn't say this, but to me, yes, there are different townships. Yes, there are different cities, but it's kind of all about, it's kind of all that metropolis in a lot of ways, you know? So the living, you know, the culture is very similar. The closer you are to the city, it's not too dissimilar from being in the city. And so anyway, so, you know, Whitney was from, I think she was from East Orange, New Jersey, which is, again, a hop, skip, and a jump from New York City. No, not Wendy, Whitney. So she was from a rough part of the city, part of New Jersey. And so she grew up hard. In a lot of ways, she was privileged in many respects because of her mother, and then her connection, you know, her aunt, whose name I cannot remember right now, but Psychic Friends comes to mind. Oh my goodness, I cannot remember her name, but she is an artist today, still. She's still making music. Psychic Friends, it's going to come to me, and it's going to hurt my feelings. But anyway, you know Whitney's family. You know Whitney's connection to music. Anyway, but Whitney was not here for anything that Wendy was saying when she would try to bait her on her radio show. And Wendy baited a lot of people. And there were, you know, some artists, Mariah Carey, she would try to bait Mariah Carey, and Mariah Carey would give her the willful. She wasn't having it. And so There were people who were caught off guard and would get really angry and then end the conversation. But then there were people who would be like, no, you're not going to play these games with me. You're really not going to do that. I know you thought you were going to do that, but you're really not going to do that. And I think because of that, I think from an outsider looking in, there has been this love for Wendy. A love-hate relationship for Wendy. Yeah, because it felt like there were times where she wasn't being malicious, but she was just being an opportunist. And call that what you will, that can be cowardice, that can be perceived as cowardice all the same, because that's not an excuse to just be a poor human being or, you know what I mean? Like, just be trifling. But nevertheless, so that's kind of a little piece of her history. Like, she's been around. I mean, she has biographies. She talks about her own history. So you are more than welcome to, you know, go get those books and read that, you know. Go to any page about her. She will tell you about her herself. She's not shy. Except when it comes to her love life. Her love life has always been a little touchy. It's always been kind of short in that, oh, me and Kev are together. That's my man. That's it. That's our relationship. We got our son. That's it. And she's been free about everything else. She's been free about her drug use in the past. She's been free about her struggles with weight loss and surgeries and things like that, body enhancements. But when it came to her relationship, she's always very tight-lipped. So let me tell you why I'm drawn to Wendy and why what she's going through right now, what she had been going through these past couple of months, and what she's going through right now has touched me. In 2007, I took an internship in Central New York. And I know I've talked about this before, but I'm going to talk about it as it relates to Wendy. So I took an internship in Central New York, well after college, after it was clear that I just was not going to find a job in Kansas City. It just wasn't going to happen. Nothing really jumped out to me. No opportunity stood out to me. I really didn't want to stay there anymore, to be honest with you. Like, and I didn't want to stay in the greater Kansas City area. I just didn't. You know how you do. You know, you come back from college and you're like, I want to take on the world. I want to do something. Or sometimes you have that feeling. And that's certainly me. I thought I was just going, you know, get a little something or other at home. And then nothing was really sticking. And then, you know, I really had a conversation with God. And God was like, you tried it. You know you don't want to stay here, girl. And so I took an internship. And, you know, I started putting out feelers for internships. And I got one in Central New York. And so I took it. And I moved halfway across the country in this semi-isolated, kind of urban, like I wanted to be urban, but it really wasn't urban, place. Maybe 4 hours outside of New York City. Because I knew I didn't want to go to the big bad city. I knew I wasn't ready for that, but I wanted to be away from Missouri. Anyhow, so I said upstate New York because it was like, oh, cool. You're not very far from Canada. You know, I could pop up to Canada whenever I wanted to. There are mountains here. It'll be fun. New York is New York. New York is different. It's, you know, the country in New York will be different than, you know, the suburbs in the country in New York State will be different than the country in the suburbs in Missouri, right? Wrong. You know, there might be pretty Finger Lakes and there might be, you know, pretty mountain views, but girl, no. I was bored out of my mind. Like, I was doing important work, so I enjoyed the work that I was doing. Although, P.S., you know, you already know when you are on an internship, they work you like a paid staff person. And though I did get a stipend, honey, it was not nearly enough. It was barely enough for me to, you know, get the food I needed, pay for rent, utilities and things like that. Like, I had to hustle. I had to really be frugal about, you know, paying bills and stuff. I had to be frugal about how I spent my money so that I could sustain myself. Anyhow, so I'm living there. It's Central New York. And it's Central New York is what you think it is in terms of diversity. It's not. It's not very diverse at all. Apart from the schools that are up in upstate New York, as you know, and you know how that works, right? You get diversity when you, in terms of the students that come to your schools, but like they're whole periods of time. Two things. There are whole periods of time where they're not even in the area because they've gone home to wherever. they're from. And then two, it's not like they really veer off the campus. They stay in and around the campus. So unless you're connected to those campuses, you're not really involved in the culture there. And so that's kind of where I found myself. I was out of college at this point. 7 months out of college at this point. And I'm in this internship in Central New York, near universities, but not attached to those universities. I was attached to a community center, and I was bored out of my nut. So, I had to find things to stay connected. I was in one of those places where it was clear after a certain point that while I enjoyed the work that I was doing, I'm just here to get the experience and then I'm out. I really don't want to be your friend, because you got a lot going on and I really don't want to. I'm telling you a little bit about my personality, but I really don't want to be your friend, because friendship is work for me. And if I'm going to put in some work, I want to know that the person that I'm being a friend, that I'm going to be a friend to, is going to be a friend to me. I don't have a whole lot of energy to give, baby, unless you give in too, and then we in this thing together and we're trying to make this work. Again, if you remember a couple of episodes ago, I talked about a very toxic relationship that I was still kind of in with a friend from college. And it was like, this was the beginning of the end of that. Well, no, not even the beginning of the end of that. It was just changed. So there was that separation. So we weren't in each other's physical space. So we were at a place where we could be better friends because we weren't up under each other the whole time. Anyhow, but I digress. I didn't, because of my attitude that, oh, they're, y'all are going through a lot right now. I don't know that I want to be friends with y'all. And plus, I don't really think I want to stay here. So let me just do my 8 and come back and find some things to do. And then just do this internship and then go somewhere else. I didn't know where the somewhere else was, but I knew I didn't want to stay there. But I knew I was going to fulfill my obligation. So it was a year internship. And so I did that. So anyway, but as a result, because I didn't make new friends like that, I was lonely, very lonely. And so there were whole times where I would go to my internship during the day. It was a 9-to-5. I told you, they worked me like a paid staff person, but they gave me a stipend, which barely covered, you know, just barely allowed me to sustain myself. Anyhow, but then I would go home, have dinner, and then not see another person until I got up the next morning, for real. I mean, I had roommates, but like, I didn't really vibe with them either. I didn't know them. I didn't want to know them. I just wanted to, I didn't want to know them. So I didn't vibe with them like that. So I really didn't talk to them. So there would be whole times where I would, when I would come home from the internship, I wouldn't talk to another soul, unless it was like my family, of course, until I went back to the internship the next day. So that was lonely. And so I had to find ways to fill my time. Like, I got into going to food co-ops to, you know, I got into going to different restaurants that were in the area to, you know, just explore more cultures through food. I got into the co-op scene, you know, where I started eating different foods, making different foods for myself. Because again, at that point I was off beef and pork, because I just didn't like the way it made me feel. And so I was trying different things. I was getting into more, I wanted to start making more dishes. It was important to me to make more dishes that made me feel more connected with Africa, specifically West Africa, because at the time that's where I thought I was from. Come to find out, or at least a lot of my DNA was from, come to find out that I was right. But then again, that's not too much of a stretch, because a lot of our people were taken from West Africa, but I digress. I wanted to connect with West Africa. I didn't know that I really wanted to connect with Senegalese food and Senegalese culture. And it turns out, like, a lot of the dishes that I connected with are actually Senegalese in base. They're like gumbo. It's Senegalese. It's like West African, for real, for real. Anyhow, and so like, ooh, ah, you know. Anyway, I digress. But so that's what I was doing to entertain myself. So I was doing some research. I was going to Middle Eastern food spots that were in the area. Because again, even though the area of New York that I was in wasn't super diverse, we still had some diversity there. Because again, it was like, I was around colleges and then, you know, so you got people moving there for different opportunities, you know, different reasons. It wasn't all white people. And so, but you know, I started to learn different cultures through their food. I started to think differently about what I ate and how I would, you know, recycling and just the environment and, you know, my footprint because of the co-ops, because that's what you do in upstate New York. You join a co-op and you start talking about hippie shit. Ooh, my bad. Sorry. Anyway, hippie stuff. I will tell that little reminder. I'll put a little reminder in there. Anyway, so I got into that, but I was still lonely. I was still going home, like even after work. So yeah, I would walk to the co-op because at this time I really wanted to walk a lot of places. So I would walk to work. When the weather was good, I would walk to work. I would walk to the co-op. I would walk to these restaurants, just do things. I did have one friend that I vibed with, but like after I moved away from the internship, we kind of fell out. Not fell out, but we just lost touch. Anyhow, but nevertheless, I was still bored out of my mind. I was in Central New York, bored. So I would do those other activities that I would add that, you know, going to the co-op, going to the restaurants, you know, occasionally hanging out with the one friend that I had. And then, you know, visiting the Finger Lakes. But then outside of that, which by the way, the Finger Lakes are really pretty. If you have a chance to go to upstate New York, go visit the Finger Lakes, especially in the autumn. They're really pretty in the autumn. They take on this really pretty color because of the mineral deposits in them. Anyhow, but I would still be bored. So I would go online and I would try to find things to do. And I remember find things like little chats or communities to be a part of. And I remember that when I was in college, one of the things that I like to do is listen to Apple Radio a lot. And Apple Radio helped connect me with shows that were kind of indie across the country. And even in the UK, that's how I found Rinse FM. I found Rinse FM through Apple Music. Yep, that's how I found them, Apple Radio. And so I don't know that I was deep on them. I think I got into Rinse FM towards the end of my internship there. And then when I moved to Baltimore, I was still on them for a little bit, but then I stopped. But, nevertheless, so I would listen to streams through Apple Radio, and I found, I don't even know how I stumbled on WBLS, but I stumbled on WBLS and I stumbled onto the Wendy Williams show. And so the first time I heard the show, I was like, what is this? What is going on? What is she talking about? Ooh, why does she say that? But I found myself being entertained. Like, I wanted to know more about the people she was talking about. I wanted to know more about the stars whose music I had listened to. I wanted to know the juice. And because it came on during drive time, the rush hour or the rush hour period, it was perfect. So I would come home, I would fix my food, you know, for dinner, and I would turn on BLS, not on the radio station, because I don't think we could get that in Central New York where I was, but I turned on the internet radio for WBLS. And so I was still listening to my Apple Music streams, but I would listen to WBLS faithfully from 5 to 7. And so that added to some of the things that I could do. Again, it was a very lonely experience for me. It was one of my own making, because I intentionally didn't make a lot of friends because I didn't want to stay connected to folks. And it was just where I was in my life at that point. But her show filled a void for me. And I remember I must have started listening to it early on, so maybe March, because my internship was from January to January. So January of 1 year, 2007, to January of 2008. And then I moved to Baltimore in 2008. And so I started January 27, 2007. And so it must have been March I found the WBLS and Wendy Williams show. And I started listening, and not too long after I started listening, she invited this guy called Charlemagne on occasionally. He would pop on occasionally and add some add his little piece to the show. And then before long, he was like a mainstay. And I actually liked the banter because I thought he was a creep. I still think Charlemagne's a creep. I know he's a creep. From my perspective, I know he's a creep. He's trying to say all the right things today, but deep down inside, he's a creep. Anyhow, but I enjoyed their banter. Like, I thought she was trashy because of the stuff that she was saying and how reckless she was with what she was saying, but I was entertained and I enjoyed the banter between them and the other people that was in that were in the on the mic. And so yeah. Oh, was it after 9/11? No. I started listening. No, I'm trying to make sure that my timing is right. But yeah, I started to listen to Wendy when I was in upstate New York because I felt like it was like my way to also connect to New York City without actually being in New York City. Because again, I knew I didn't want to be in upstate New York, but I knew I definitely didn't want to be in the city, New York City. So anyway, I would rush home, you know, prep dinner, do dinner, have dinner and listen to the show. And then after it was off, I felt like I had, you know, I felt like there was, I had added to the things that I needed to do. And so I felt a little less lonely listening to her show because I felt like in a small way I was a part of it. Anyhow, so occasionally she would talk about her husband, Kevin. Occasionally, but just talk about it as it relates to, oh, I'm a ride or die, that's my boo, blah, blah, blah. And then she would talk about her son, Lil Kev. And then that continued when she got her show, TV show. But anyway, so all the way through 2007, the Wendy Williams show, I credit as having got me through one of the boredest, loneliest times of my life. It was my own making, but nevertheless, she got me through a boring period of my life or a lonely time in my life. And then, so it got me all the way through 2007. So 2008, I'm preparing to leave Syracuse, New York, which is where I was. I was just going to say upstate, but now I've told you where I was. I was in Syracuse. Anyway, or Syracuse. I don't know how y'all say it. I say Syracuse. Anyway, so I move to Baltimore and I do another internship. And so in moving, I still try to stay connected to WBLS, but the way they're streaming, I stopped streaming it from Apple Music Apple Music, and I streamed it directly from WBLS's website. But they were changing the way that you could listen to the show, and they were threatening to just take it off the stream and you would have to listen to it from the radio. And I knew that if I couldn't get it in Syracuse, there was certainly no way that I would be able to get it in Baltimore. So I think I just stopped listening to it. And I think I also just stopped listening to Rinse FM and the other streams that I listened to there when I was in upstate New York, because I started listening to Baltimore stations. I intentionally started to make friends with the folks I worked with. I enjoyed working with them. And so I just had more time to do different stuff. I couldn't just sit and listen to the radio. You know what I mean? I just couldn't sit and listen to podcasts because I was in direct service. So I had to like be out talking to people and stuff. So I just didn't have the time anymore. And I was filling my evenings with other things, hanging out with my friends that I was intentionally making now, being in Baltimore. Because I think I knew I wanted to stay. And so I started to set root early. So 2008, I kind of lost touch with Wendy. And then I heard, so again, the internships were from January to January. So maybe February 2008, I moved to Baltimore and I begin to lose touch. Maybe around May, I just lost touch altogether. And I'm trying to catch up with New York radio stations. So I'm listening to, I cannot remember the station that I was listening to, but it was always recording from First and First Avenue in New York City. And I remember listening to Andrew Sound on there and Pizza Party, these little shows that were on there, and the Morricone Youth. I listened to them, and I think maybe, I'm sure I did an episode over these. So just go back through. I think it was a Bay's World episode, maybe the first one. Maybe the first or second Bay's World episode. I talk about the different radio stations that are the radio station that I used to listen to that had the different DJs on, you know, bringing different things. Anyhow, but I was trying to listen to them, but then I think I gave them up too. And again, I was all about Baltimore. Excuse me. And so I fell out of touch by May of 2008. But then I get this urge to reach back out to Wendy to see what she's doing, because when I started to lose touch with her, I knew that she was getting money to go and have her TV show. So I knew she was starting to try to make the journey to pivot to TV. But then I heard, it was like the end of 2008 or the beginning of 2009, I heard that some foolishness happened to where one of the women on her show was fired. And then in the firing, alleged and sued Wendy and her husband, alleging that her husband, Kev, Wendy's husband, Kev, had sexually harassed her for a while, and that Wendy knew about the sexual harassment and did nothing about it. And in that whole process, I think Charlamagne got caught up in it and was fired too. So she was fired, he was fired, someone else was fired from the show. And I don't know whatever became of that lawsuit, but when I had checked in toward the end of 2008 or the beginning of 2009, I figured out a way to listen to the show. I think I was able to still listen to the show on WBLS's webpage. And so I streamed the show there, and it was just Wendy talking. And she was, you know, still being Wendy, still doing her same thing, but it felt like that same magic that I experienced when it was her, Charlamagne, and everybody else she had on the show, it wasn't there for me anymore. And maybe it was because of my life was just different. Maybe I was just in a different headspace, but the show had changed for me. And so it had really changed because those people that I was used to listening to all throughout 2007 weren't on there anymore. But then, you know, she was just different, it felt. And so I just stopped listening from there. And so fast forward to maybe 2017, 2018, she's had her show on TV for a while, and she's still doing Wendy things, you know, still serving her brand of journalism, and she's successful. And I have this urge, I don't know why. I do know why, because I was attached to Charlamagne. I get on Audible and I download his book. What is it? I can't even remember his biography, his most recent biography, whose name I cannot remember, but he's sitting in a chair with a cigar looking stupid. Anyway, so in his biography, I was drawn to getting his biography because he and Wendy provided a lot of entertainment and helped me through a period where I was very lonely and I felt an allegiance to him. So I downloaded the biography and I listened to it, and it was entertaining. But the piece that most entertained me was that period of time where he talks about his time on the Wendy Williams show. And for obvious reasons, he doesn't tell the exact reason as to why it ended, his time on the show ended, other than he had a falling out with Kev. And because Wendy was a ride or die woman, she, regardless of what happened in the beef, that she was always going to take his side. And so no matter how tight their relationship was, and their relationship was tight, when he was first appearing on the show, it was at her request, and they didn't pay Charlamagne a dime, but they allowed him to come up from North Carolina and sleep in their home. Kevin, Wendy, sleep in their home so that he could be there to do the show and then go back to North Carolina again. Or Monk's Corner is where he's from. And anyway, so he shares that information in his biography. He also shares that, you know, as he's, you know, they start to pay him and the money is good. So 2008, toward the end of 2008, the money is good. Like, he begins to get paid and the money is really good. And the show chemistry is working out, and he's trying to figure out different things that he can do. And so there's a period where Kev tries to, like, I think he wants to put other artists from Monk's Corner or from North Carolina on. I think Monk's Corner is from North Carolina. I can't. One of them Carolinas. Anyhow, he's trying to, as he's climbing, lift other artists from his home state up. And so somehow or another, I think I'm mixing stories, but somehow or another, he gets involved in this negotiation with Kev and someone else. And he finds that he doesn't like Kev's strong arm tactics when it comes to negotiation. He thinks he's too aggressive, and he asks for too much money with nothing to back it up. And again, he's just too aggressive and he doesn't do business the way that Charlamagne would approach business. And so they have a falling out, and you know, Kev expects Wendy not to do any business with Charlamagne and boots him from the show. And I'm not sure if the falling out has anything to do with the sexual harassment lawsuit that one of the women brought up. I can't remember, and I'm not going back to the biography to find out, just because I'm not. Anyway, but it was, all of this happened around the same time, and so they all just got booted. And in the biography, again, Charlamagne doesn't exactly share the details of what happened, except to say that he knew he was in the right. Because of his relationship with Wendy, he felt like had Kev not been in the picture, Wendy not had the relationship that she had with Kev and been the ride or die chick, Wendy would have sided with Charlamagne and would have made sure that Charlamagne was okay. But it didn't happen like that. And so he parted ways with her and then went on about his business. And, you know, everything worked out because Charlamagne is where he is today, the troll that he has always been. Anyhow, so fast forward to these last couple of months where we're hearing in the tabloid, we've been hearing for the better part of 7 months that Kev has had a woman, maybe a year, that Kev, Wendy Williams' husband, Big Kev, had a woman on the side in New Jersey and had bought her a house. And even in Charlamagne's biography, he alluded to the fact that she knew about his side women, but she's a ride or die chick. So maybe that was the tenor of their relationship. Maybe they allowed for that in their relationship. He didn't know. But that he knew that come hell or high water, Wendy was going to stick by Kev. So anyway, so we hear in the tabloids that he's got this woman on the side, and this younger woman on the side. Doesn't matter if she was younger, she's another woman. He's married and he has got another woman on the side in a house in New Jersey, just like they're in New Jersey. He and Wendy have a house and a family in New Jersey. Excuse me. And then, you know, so this is April now. She checks herself into rehab, what was it, March? End of February, early March. She takes a leave of absence from the show and she checks herself into a sober house. We're finding out at the same time that this side woman that he's always alleged to have been with, who he has a house with in New Jersey, is pregnant. And we're like, okay, is she taking this leave of absence because it's coming out that this woman is pregnant? Or is she taking a leave of absence because she really has a drinking problem and that she just needs to get that together? Well, flash forward to today, what we know now is we don't know this for sure. She hasn't out and out said this, but what we can deduce is she was going through those changes because she found, yes, because the side woman, the woman that Kev was in a relationship with on the side, was pregnant. and that she did give, she was either gave birth or she's about to give birth. And that was really weighing on Wendy. How could you do this? It's one thing for you to have a woman on the side. It's quite another thing for you to get that woman pregnant and set up house and then have this whole other thing. You essentially have a second life. And she was going through the emotions of that and the betrayal of that, as any woman would. Now, mind you, my husband gets, I find out that my husband has a woman on the side. Well, look like we don't need to be together. Look like she need to be your main and I need to be your past. Because we have no business here. We've been through too much. We gonna go through too much. We didn't invest too much time into each other for you to be having time to be entertaining anyone else. It's just simple, cold, hard facts. You don't want to be with me no more? Cool. Go on and be with somebody else, but you not gonna be with me and somebody else. That's just not how we gonna do this. That's not how that's gonna work with us. Anyhow, and Stephen, oops, well, I've told you his name. Anyway, I am just telling the business. Anyway, whatever. I'm gonna figure out a way to bleep that out because I really don't want you to know his name. Anyway, so, you know, it's like, it's not even that big a deal. It's like, you know, it's like, this is the thing that broke the camel's back. And I understand that every woman is different and everyone has their different breaking points. But I just hate that this was her breaking point. And then to hear that Charlamagne is saying, oh, he's had a woman on the side for a while. And there was a whole time where maybe Wendy didn't know about the woman on the side. But that there was a period, one of the reasons why he and Kev fell out was not because of business, but was because Kev was mad that Charlamagne's bodyguard, which is also his best friend, had caught the eye of Kev's mistress. So follow me. Kev's mistress wanted to be with Charlamagne's best friend, who was also his bodyguard. And Kev didn't like that. So Kev came to Charlamagne and said, and accused him of trying to set his mistress up with his best friend. And that's why they fell out. That's actually why they fell out. Now, but Charlamagne is saying this after it's known that Wendy is leaving Kev. And I'm like, of all the reasons that y'all gonna fall out, you fall out because your mistress wants a man on the side? How chintzy and trifling are you? You have a whole wife and a life. And you really, actually not chintzy and trifling. That's controlling. You want to control everybody in your life. All the women, they are there for you and you want to control them very specifically. Unfortunately, you can't control Wendy no more because not only have you booted her out, has she booted you out of the marriage bed, but you can't even be a part of her business no more. And she got enough juice that she can make that happen, and I'm proud of her for that. I'm not into what she does anymore. I don't connect with her style of journalism the way I used to anymore, but I appreciate her finding the agency to boot him out of her life because he should have been gone. And so that's why I'm connected to Wendy. That's why I feel the way I do about Wendy. I'm connected to this story because for a period in my life, she provided a lot of support. Her show did. And her she did for me without even knowing it. And yeah, I'm glad that she's in a better space now, but you know, I'm glad she's in a better space now because that was a wretched place to be. And how would you feel? You thought you were doing this thing. You thought you had an arrangement with your husband and then your husband goes in and breaks it. Like really breaks it, girl. Like breaks it. So anyway, that's what I wanted to talk about today. I just think it's fascinating and I just encourage you to just look into it further, regardless of whether or not you like her stuff, the what she does, because I certainly don't connect with it anymore. Like, you gotta feel for Wendy. You have to. This is a woman who, for better or worse, devoted herself to her husband, made certain allowances, and he broke them. And maybe in a lot of ways she was abused in some ways. Like, I don't want to assume anything, but like, maybe she wasn't. Maybe she just allowed, she had pushed herself to allow certain things, and then this was the breaking point, and boy, did it ever break. So good for her. So, yeah, if you're still with me, thank you so much for sticking around for the ramble. But nevertheless, I feel a way about Wendy, and I'm glad she's in a better place right now. It's like one of those things where you care about someone and they leave the bad relationship that they're in, and you want to believe that they'll stay away. And you want to believe that they've turned over a new leaf. But people are allowed to change their mind, and they often do, especially when it comes to relationships. And so there's a piece of me, the pessimist in me, who has witnessed several friends leave terrible relationships only to go back because the cycle of abuse is real. And I had one friend who just didn't like being alone. So he went back to his girlfriend, who was awful to him. And I think they're married. I fell out of touch with him, but I'm pretty sure they're married. Anyhow. Yeah. So I'm happy for the choices that she has made at this moment, and I pray that she can stick to what works for her and her son. And if that means not in a cordial relationship, if that means in a cordial relationship with Kevin and not a romantic one, then that's got to be the way it is. I'm sure. Shoot, little Kev is probably. He's probably out of school by now. He's probably out of school right now and probably doing his own thing. So it's more about Wendy and doing what's best for her. So I just hope that she can leave that relationship for good. But ultimately, it's her choice. You know how it is. Anyhow, thank you for listening. Be sure to rate the show and leave me a message on anchor.fm. Like I said, you don't have to download the app, although it's easy to do it from the app. You can go to the webpage, which is in the show description. You can also choose to donate if you want. Even 99 cents will be a helpful contribution to the show. But if you don't feel like donating, just tell somebody about the show. Send them an episode that you really love. Talk about an episode, what have you. Just share. That's how you're going to help. That's another way that you can help grow this show and help it evolve. Also, you can leave a favorable rating on the usual spots: CastBox, Pocket Cast, Anchor, of course, Google, Spotify, Apple, you know, the usual places. Just leave me a favorable rating and leave a review as well. All right. Once again, this was on my mind. I really wanted to do this because, again, Wendy and Charlamagne, to a certain extent, meant to me in a very crucial part of my life. So I just wanted to skip over anything else I had planned to do to do this. So, like I said, next week is true crime and it's Infamous Baltimore Story. And again, it's a little gritty, so just know that. All right. Thanks for listening. Until next time.